Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. At her funeral on Sunday, fellow comedians praised Joan Rivers for her sharp wit and fearless performances.
I came back through San Francisco, and I had two shows there. I have a really terrific agent. First show, I played to all blind people, which, very hard. My mother was blind. I'm sick of blind people. I'll tell you, if you're blind in this audience, just tap out. I'm so sorry. Blind people are so f***ing selfish. It's all about them. When was the last time a blind person gave you a compliment? Think about it. You look great. Have you lost weight? Never happens.
What really made Joan Rivers funny? Well, my next guest has a theory. Peter McGraw is a marketing and psychology professor and director of the Humor Research Lab at the University of Colorado, where he studies what makes us laugh and why. He's also co-author of The Humor Code, a global search for what makes things funny. Professor McGraw, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with that Joan Rivers clip we just played. Made me cringe just a little bit. She's making fun of blind people. So why are people laughing?
Well, it helps to be a Joan Rivers fan, I think. So certainly the issue of why are people laughing is closely connected to why aren't other people laughing. And the short answer is that the people laughing see how that situation is wrong, yet okay. Or in our academic speak, a benign violation.
What is benign violation theory?
So the idea is that the things that we laugh at, if you think about it, laughter is a tool of communication. It's a behavior meant to communicate with others. And the idea is that we live in a world of things that are scary and the things that are wrong, that are amiss. And yet, in a certain smaller set of circumstances, the things that seem amiss are actually in some way okay, acceptable, or safe, or as we say, a violation is benign. And you delight in those situations because they're not really bad, and you laugh to communicate to others that this seemingly bad thing is actually okay. But what makes something wrong, what makes something okay, it depends on context, depends on the person delivering it, depends on the person's values and beliefs of the person hearing it. And so Joan's able to do this in part because she says things that are wrong about herself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, also, she is right. It may be in poor taste, but technically that's true in the sense that if you lack sight, then you lack the ability to make those kinds of observations about the world.
Okay, so true, the teller. And the situation is a violation, but the situation is benign. Do all of those things have to be present to make something funny?
We think so. Yeah, the idea is that if a situation is totally benign, there's nothing arousing, there's nothing exciting, there's nothing threatening about it. It's why you can't tickle yourself. There's no actual attack there. Things that are pure violations, that are just purely wrong, they don't induce this kind of reaction. There's no reason to communicate to others that this bad situation's okay. So the creepy stranger who tries to tickle you on the street, there's nothing funny about that situation.
So
you have to bring those things both together when you're tickled by a loved one in a way that's not too aggressive. That, you get the delight, you get the laughter, and so on.
So what are some of the other forms of violation? Tickling, you mentioned. Play fighting is one that you talk about in your research. And linguistical norms. Let's hear just an example of a violation of a linguistical norm. Mitch Hedberg here on puns.
I order the club sandwich all the time, and I'm not even a member, man. I don't know how I get away with it. I like my sandwiches with three pieces of bread. So do I. Well, let's form a club then. Okay, but we need some more stipulations. Yes, we do. Instead of cutting the sandwich once, let's cut it again. Yes, four triangles. And we will position them into a circle. And in the middle, we will dump chips. Or a potato salad. Okay. Let me ask you a question. How you feel about frilly toothpicks? I'm form. Well, this club is form. Spread the word on menus nationwide.
So, Mitch Hedberg, joke about a club sandwich. Why is that funny?
Well, so wordplay, puns, and so on, purposely misuse language. And so he's, at the same time, misusing a term, misinterpreting what club means, while at the same time finding a way to make sense. You see this over and over again. So it's not okay to compliment your coworker's nice buns unless he or she has brought in some freshly baked buns, right? So you take this sort of taboo and there's an alternative meeting there that takes a violation and makes it benign.
I noticed one of the points in your research is a violation can seem benign because of a lack of commitment to the violated norm. So we've got an example of a joke here. The Sarah Silverman, never one to shy away from violation.
I wear this St. Christopher medal sometimes because I'm Jewish, but my boyfriend is Catholic, and it was cute the way he gave it to me. You know, he said, if it doesn't burn through my skin, it will protect me, which is, who cares? Different religions, you know? I mean, I guess the only time it's an issue, I suppose, would be, like, if you're having a baby, you got to figure out, like, how you want to raise your baby or whatever, you know, which wouldn't even still not be an issue for us because we'd be honest, you know, and just say, you know, like, mommy is one of the chosen people, and daddy believes that Jesus is magic.
So that's kind of joke that could take a real nosedive in some types of audiences. The audience has to play along. How so?
Yeah, so the notion is that there's sort of this sweet spot between telling a joke that's too tame and telling a joke that's too risque. And as you know, Sarah falls on the risque side too much. But your perceptions, your belief about what the topic is, your commitment to how important it is to be Jewish or Catholic, will certainly help or hurt that joke land in that way. So, you know, being a little bit more loose in the way you see religions and how you think about God helps you laugh at both the Jewish parts of that joke and the Christian parts of that joke. It ramps up the safety in those situations to try to help you get to that sweet spot. You change the audience, you change whether that joke lands.
Why is something funny? Well, we're talking to Peter McGraw. He's director of the Humor Research Lab at the University of Colorado and co-author of The Humor Code, a book about the global search for what makes things funny. Peter, I would love to know where you think this joke falls on the humor scale. It's a clip from the late comedian Patrice O'Neill from his 2011 stand-up special called Elephant in the Room.
What's his name? Joran Vandersloot? Right? We find out he was a serial killer. Man, he kills women. That's what he do. He do it well. You know what I mean? We know the girl that he, you know, supposedly had. What's the girl in Aruba? Natalie Holloway, right? But the one he just killed, the girl in Peru. What's her name? Exactly. Look how fast you said Natalie. You said Natalie. Natalie. I said that like Family Feud. All right, name a white girl been missing for 5 years in the room. Natalie Holloway. Survey says. Name a Peruvian girl that was killed yesterday.
So again, at face value, he's talking about the disappearance and murder of two young women. Now, why is that funny?
Again, this depends wholly on that audience, but What Patrice is doing, and I thought in general did very well, is this notion that we find time and time again that the best jokesters, the best comedians, want to speak truth to power. They want to point out the things that are wrong in the world. And there he sort of very cleverly is pointing out how the press seems to be overly interested in pretty blonde, blue-eyed victims. And for that joke to be funny, you sort of have to recognize that. You have to see that, and in many ways see that that's wrong. You know, he's engaging in satire. He's he's criticizing the press, and it's actually pretty hard to argue with him because he is right. You can't name that other victim. You don't know who it is.
Right.
And you can't name who that victim is because of the way the press has treated this.
So again, the conclusion that it's about the audience, but do certain people have a higher threshold for meaner, sharper, more satirical humor? Is this something that you can analyze by country, by culture, by region?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that because what we've been doing so far is doing something that for thousands of years scholars and thinkers and entertainers have tried to do, which is to try to deconstruct humor by using kind of thought experiments. Why is this funny? Why is that funny? But in the Humor Research Lab, we want to go beyond that. We don't want to engage in philosophy. We want to engage in psychology. And so you have to measure things. And ideally, what you do is you measure reactions after first manipulating certain aspects of the situation, changing the phrasing, changing the timing, changing the place that this joke is told in order to see, are people's reactions in line with your theory in this case? A benign violation approach. And so there are these individual differences. You can measure individual differences, for instance, with regard to things like disgust sensitivity. Some people are just easier to gross out than other people.
Mm-hmm.
And those things should, in the laboratory, translate into a greater or lesser appreciation for scatological comedy, for toilet jokes.
Are certain things universally funny, like a pratfall?
Yeah, so when you look at the list of violations that can occur in the world, the things that can go wrong, it definitely seems to be that the physical, the person slipping on some ice, stumbling up a set of stairs, or the slapstick comedy of the Three Stooges, seems to be the closest thing that you can find to things that people laugh at across ages, across gender, across cultures. It's why Super Bowl ads feature so much slapstick, because they're trying to appeal to such a large audience.
Are there some topics or instances that are never funny? I mean, we still don't really have 9/11 jokes, and it's been 13 years since 9/11.
So yeah, it's been 13. You know, it's been 13 years. But The Onion published one of their most famous articles around that time, just 2 weeks afterwards. And what the writers of The Onion did, and my co-author and I found this out on our Humor Code travels, is that they didn't make jokes about the victims. They made jokes about the terrorists, which had a really great effect. One is that it helped introduce a bit of humor back into a world that was without it. But it also served this sort of subversive element that comedy can do. When you're laughing at terrorists, now you're not afraid of them.
Hmm.
And terrorism plays on fear. And so in that way, that issue really helped people heal, not only just through the laughter, but also it could change the way they think about these seemingly scary people.
We hear some of the headlines from The Onion's first issue. This is right after September 11th. Hijackers surprised to find themselves in hell. Not knowing what else to do, woman bakes American flag cake. Hugging up 76,000%. You've actually tried to apply your theories outside of your lab, and you tried stand-up comedy. How'd you do?
I didn't do so well. I find
that funny.
Yeah, people do, actually. Although my audience didn't, but people outside of the audience tend to. But I actually did try stand-up at a dive bar. I bombed. But that pushed me out of the laboratory. That caused the Humor Code Project. And at the end of the Humor Code Project, my co-author, Joel Warner, said he would only do the trips if, when we were finished, I would get on stage again to prove that I've learned something along the way.
Are you ready?
I did it.
You did?
I did. And I don't want to give it all away, but I can tell you that it had to have gone better.
Well, Peter McGraw, thank you so much.
That was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Peter McGraw is a marketing and psychology professor and director of the Humor Research Lab. That's at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and co-author of The Humor Code, a global search for what makes things funny. There's also a link to the Humor Code website where you can learn a lot about that Humor Code search. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. And stay with us for Learning Through Laughter. We're going to hear about a teacher who uses stand-up comedy to help students discover their talents and to cope with teenage insecurities. That's When Word of Mouth continues on NHPR.